Blog Talk Radio
presents a Blog Radio Show. Welcome to Applause Radio Show. I'm Joanne Barton, and thanks so much for joining me. And I hope you had a great time last night with Greg Martin from the Kentucky Headhunters. Great new album they have out. And if you listened last night, you get to hear the music. So it sounded great. So the new album, That's a Fact, Jack. And congratulations to our winners for the concerts over at NJ Pack. We had... let's see if we got the names off the top of my head. Martin Lee won the tickets to see George Clinton. Penny Irwin won the tickets to see the 90s Dance Party. And George Bellici won the tickets to see Alice Cooper and Buck Cherry. So congratulations. And if you guys want tickets, go to njpack.org. Go get your own tickets and go see the other great events that they have coming up. So tonight we have a great show, too. I want to touch back on a story that I remember back in 97, almost 25 years ago. And I came across this gentleman on Facebook, and we are Facebook friends, and I just dined to talk to him about his career and the events that happened almost 25 years ago. So tonight we have actor, author, filmmaker, and he does a lot of stuff. We're going to find out all about it. Mr. D. Thompson, and he is the author of How I Went to the Oscars Without a Ticket. And if you guys remember the story as much as I do, you'll remember it was all over the papers. It was TV. It was everywhere. So, D., welcome to the show. Thank you so much for hanging out with me tonight.
Thank you, Joanne Barton. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. This is exciting. Thanks, everybody. It's Oscar season, of course.
Yeah.
And, everybody's excited. I hope you guys have picked some winners for this year, you know.
I got to be quite honest. I haven't seen any of the films. I don't even know what's out. I mean, I haven't been to the movies in maybe 2 years, I guess, because of the pandemic.
Well, you know, a lot of things has gone and streaming, you know, and everything's streaming and everybody's watching everything from home, so... It takes away the intimacy of watching a film in a theater with, you know, a bunch of strangers in a dark room. So, you know, but still, they're still making films. The industry's still going strong.
Of course.
And everything's starting to come back, thank God. So, yeah. you know, it's one of the most influential industries in entertainment, filmmaking.
Of course.
Everybody loves the movies that we make.
What's your pick for this year? What do you think's going to win?
Well, I've been tracking King Richard with Will Smith because I did a movie with his wife, Jada Pinkett. We did Kingdom Come.
Cool.
You know, I started watching tennis because of Venus and Serena Williams, you know. I'm a basketball guy from North Carolina, so. But when Venus and Serena, when these sisters started playing tennis, I'm like, whoa, not one, but two.
Right, double
so,
trouble.
And then I heard the backstory about their dad, you know, pushing them. I was like, what, their dad? You know, you would think maybe the mom would be pushing them out there on the tennis court, but the father, you know, he saw something in his kids and he wanted them to become something, and next thing you know, they're world champion tennis players.
right. Almost like Tiger Woods, too. Same story, similar, you know?
Yeah, it's very similar. And,
yeah,
and Will
so,
Smith did an awesome job, you know, playing the father, Richard Williams.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I'll have to check it out. When is the Oscars? Is it next week? When is it?
It's next week, not this weekend, the next weekend.
Are you going?
On Sunday. I normally go to a viewing party, and I get a chance to talk about, you know, my story. So I've been, you know, committed over the years to viewing parties, and they get a chance to talk to me about how I went to the Oscars and my story with, you know, everything. And plus I branded my story, and they call me the Oscar guy in Hollywood.
And, there you go.
I put a wrap on my car, and I nicknamed my car. I got a Ford Flex that I put a wrap on, and it's the cover of the book, actually. And
oh, cool.
I nicknamed it the Blue Streak, and I travel around the country, you know, promoting the story and telling my story at different book signings and different bookstores, and I bring the intimacy of filmmaking and the Oscars to those secondary markets, and people get a chance to hear my story, you know. And also, I work for the Oscars, so I'm going full circle.
Right.
Let's go back.
Let's go back, because now you've been in a lot of films. You've had many roles in over almost 100 films and commercials and whatnot. So now this is 1997. Were you a fully working actor at the time and just had a dream to go to the Oscars? Tell us what happened.
Well, before 97, that's when the Oscars, that's when I went to the Oscars.
Right.
The 69th Academy Awards. But before that, I was working, you know, in North Carolina. Well, actually, I was a DJ, and I was producing music. Mm. And a gentleman came to me, and he wanted me to produce, you know, and help him out. His name was James Brown Henderson. And I didn't know anything about producing, you know, or managing talent. And so I gave him a chance, older gentleman, and I started managing his career.
Mm-hmm.
And I took him down to Miami, and we were in the process of getting an agent through Don Johnson's agent, who was on Miami Vice.
Yeah.
And this was an 18-hour drive from North Carolina, mind you.
Wow.
So we're in this little small car, you know, sleeping on the side of the road at rest areas and, you know, just really on a grind. And the guy said, he said, "Hey, man, you know, had you ever tried acting before?" And I was like, no. I'm his manager now. I'm getting him out there and getting him seen. And I got him in some movies, you know, with Cicely Tyson, Blessed Assurance.
Mm-hmm.
And, we did a few things together. And then after I got back to North Carolina, I started thinking about what the guy said, you know, about me being an actor.
Right.
And I came across a audition in the newspaper, in the local newspaper, for an audition for a small play called Our Town.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking for, and I auditioned for the part of Joe Stoddard. And Joe Stoddard in the play, this is a play about, you know, small town Vermont in the 1920s. You know.
Right, it's a big play. I know. I've heard it. I've seen it. I've actually seen it.
So I said, you know, and I had been reading acting books, so I started reading these acting books after I auditioned for the play. And I said, well, if I'm going to go in here and audition, I need to know a little something about acting.
Right.
And I read a story about Al Pacino.
Mm-hmm.
And Al Pacino said when he played certain characters, he used method acting, and he said to play a part of an old man, which is the part that I auditioned for, which was this old man named Joe Stoddard. And Al Pacino says when he did older characters, he would, you know, wear rocks in his shoes to give him pain so that he could feel that pain, because old people are always in pain, you know, seem to be in pain. And he,
oh, is
and
that
he
my
used
problem?
That in his character.
Is that my problem? No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Well, I'm a senior citizen also, so.
Yeah. No, I ain't hating. Believe me. No, don't hate the player, hate the game. Don't hate the player, hate the game, right?
Hate the game. There goes we are. Hate the game. We're still in the game. So
exactly.
I read the book, and so I went in, auditioned for the guy, got the part, you know, and then rehearsed. And this is at a community college, mind you.
Yeah.
I was taking, you know, and so I got the part and invited my mother to the play. So here I am, you know, I'm putting stuff in my hair, making my hair gray.
Yeah.
I'm doing all of this stuff that I had, you know, read up on. So I'm hunchback, you know, at the funeral scene, you know, in character. And I brought my mother to the play. And she sat in the audience. And, you know, she watched the play. And then after the play, we went out to eat dinner. This is when she was alive, you know. That's
the
soul.
Yeah. How old were you at the time? How old were you at the time, Dave?
At the time, this was over 20 years ago, 97. You know, I'm 60 now.
Yeah.
So this was, what, 20, 25 years ago?
All right, so 40, yeah.
So we went out to eat, right? And so I said, Mom, I said, how did you like the play? And my mother was an evangelist minister. She never cursed.
Mm.
She said, oh, the play was good, son, but I didn't see you up there.
Oh, wow.
And I said, what? I said, what, you didn't see me up there? I was the old man. And she cursed. She said, oh, S-H-I-T. And I was like, what?
Oh, man. Well, yeah, you were that good. You were that good. She didn't even recognize her own son.
She didn't recognize her own son. She said, that was you? I said, yeah, that was me. I was the old man. She said, oh, boy. She cursed, and I had never heard a curse before. And that's when I knew. You know,
right,
meanwhile,
your mom's sitting watching the play saying, that damn fool made me sit here and watch this, and he ain't in a minute. Right?
I know. She's like, where is he at? Because it was a big funeral scene, you know, the funeral scene where the old man is in the funeral scene.
Yeah.
And
I've actually seen the play,
play,
yeah. That's so funny. But right, yeah, but you must have been so good that she didn't even know it was you. And that was it. That was the turning point for you.
That was the turning point. And I got on stage, and you know, it was just a magical feeling, you know, to be on stage and have that power and to have that connection with the audience at a theater. You know, in a theater, you know, a cough is a cough, you know, a laugh, a snick, you know,
right,
whatever. You could feel it. It was very intimate in the theater. So with it being so quiet, you know,
right,
in theater. And then, you know, learning, you know, the craft and going to school for acting and everything, then I found what my personality attracted me to the different film styles of acting, or filmmaking and acting and all of that, was film. So I'm attracted more to film versus TV or theater, you know, even though I went to school for theater education, you know.
But, yeah.
As a film actor, it's more intimate for me, and, you know, and it's close up, and you can do a lot of takes. And, you know, it just fits my personality to make films,
right,
you know.
Right. So prior to getting the acting bug and wanting to be in the industry, did you ever have dreams or aspirations of going to the Oscars? Or no, it happened after you started becoming into the entertainment industry when you wanted to get to the Oscars.
You know, when people say, you know, God has a plan for you and you don't know what it is, your life has already been written.
True.
And you just have to walk into your destiny. Well, my life has been like Forrest Gump, okay? I've walked into my destiny, and it's for me. I'm comfortable where I'm at. I'm living my dream. And not knowing anything about acting, I was in the military, you know. For many years, I retired from the Navy.
Wow.
From the United States Navy. And me and one of my friends, who's from Virginia, we were sailors. This is back in the 80s. And we were on Liberty, and you know, and we went on Liberty, and we were on Liberty, and I never told anybody this story, but we were on Liberty. We left the ship about 6:30, and as soon as they said Liberty call, we were gone. You know, young teenagers.
Yeah, right.
So we're in France, and we're walking down the street, and we see these big billboards on the side of the building, and it's a picture of Superman, Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
So Christopher Reeves is on the side of the building. We recognize that. We're like, oh, look, Superman, you know. And we walk into this hotel. It's a beautiful hotel. We walk into the lobby. And in the lobby, there's Elizabeth Taylor, what's his name? Dan Blocker, the guy that played Grizzly Adams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember his name. Grizzly Dan, Adams. Yeah.
Yeah, so we were talking to him. We was like, oh, there's Grizzly Adams. So we're talking to Grizzly Adams. We're talking to Elizabeth Taylor. These two country guys from the South, you know. I'm from North Carolina. He's from Virginia. Two teenagers not knowing anything about anything. And we're talking to them casually, you know, and really big stars, you know, back then.
Yeah.
And we've seen them in the movies, and we're just talking casually, you know. And this is like a Forrest Gump moment. And we walk out on the deck after we talk to them, and we see all these people eating outside on this big, huge patio. And across from the people, we saw this roped-off area of all these photographers. And they were taking pictures of the folks eating. And back then, I thought it was the strangest, weirdest thing I'd ever seen before in my life. You know, I was like, why are these people taking pictures of folks eating, you know? And it was like a dumb thing to do. But I didn't know. At the time, this was a film festival in Cannes, France.
Oh.
That's where we were at.
Right.
So we were at the film festival on the French Riviera, mind you. I know all of this now, but we were just two sailors on Liberty.
And right, so, and you stumbled into the Cannes movie festival.
And we went, you know, walking around. They invited us in. They were really nice to us. And we went to these different rooms, and there were movies playing, and you know, we would go in one room, and it would be in French or whatever language it was, and me and my friend, we'd be like, oh, we don't understand this, and we'd walk out, and we'd go into another room, and it would be another film, and it would be in Portuguese or whatever language, and so we were just, you know, two sailors on Liberty, and this was the biggest film festival in the world. And it is still today, you know.
Exactly.
And that happened to me in the military. And I never wanted to be an actor, anything like that, not thinking like that, just serving my country at the time, you know, being a young man. And then fast forward, here I am, you know, as a Screen Actors Guild actor.
Right. Crazy.
Since 96.
So what made you decide I'm sneaking into the Oscars tonight, and how did you go about doing it?
Well, I've heard the word sneak before, and I don't like that word. I didn't sneak
in.
I went there, but you know, it sounds like I snuck in, but it was really a day that really changed my life, and I've lived my life based on faith. You know, my mother, she raised eight kids as an evangelist minister in North Carolina, you know, being raised in the Bible Belt. I like to say I was raised on three things in North Carolina. That was racing, wrestling, and religion. So we grew up, you know, going to Billy Graham, you know, listening to Billy Graham and Reverend Ike and all of that. And she would always tell her kids, be careful what you pray and ask God for, because you just might get it. And struggling, you know, as an actor back then, trying to get into the business, you know, when I decided, okay, I want to do this, and I tried to do it from North Carolina, you know, hey, Hollywood, I'm over here in North Carolina trying to, you know, break into the business of acting. But North Carolina provided me a lot of opportunity at the time because they had a lot of productions going on. You know, it was a little secret. North Carolina was, you know, had, you know, all these movies and production and television shows that were coming up. Dawson's Creek, One Tree Hill, you know, all of those shows, Days of Thunder, you know, The Fugitive, Nail, starring Jodie Foster. And so I got an opportunity to work in my state, you know. And you know, go to auditions for the Finn Cannons, you know, Lisa Finn Cannon, Craig and Mark Finn Cannon. I love them to death, you know, casting directors in the industry, and Wilmington, North Carolina. So, you know, but I when I transferred to Hollywood after I got my SAG card, you know, in North Carolina, I said, well, it's time to leave the small pond to go to a larger pond. And went to Hollywood. When I got out to Hollywood, you know, start from the bottom, you know, doing extra work. And I would do everything so that I could learn the craft and learn the industry. And because I'm so interested in every job that takes place
on the film set, you know. I'm interested in everybody's job. I've always had that curiosity, and I wanted to learn everybody's job. Mm-hmm. And I did over the years, working as an extra, you know, and my mother, she would embarrass me. She would, you know, I'd come home and I'd be working as an extra in the background, and my mother would introduce me. She'd say, "Hey, everybody, this is my son. He's a big movie star in Hollywood," you know. And I was just walking in the background, drinking coffee at the table, you know, working as an extra, or being henchman number two, like I was in the movie Bullworth. Halle Berry got me in that film, you know, and she's in the book that I wrote also. But, you know, and that's where I met a good friend, Michael Clark Duncan. But, you know, just trying to break in, knocking on doors. And I was very fortunate to get an agent and a manager, like the first week and I got in Hollywood. So
really?
I was able to, you know, yeah. And I've been with the same agent since then.
Wow.
The Pinnacle. And, I mean, I've just really been blessed, but it's been a tough road, but it's been exciting, and it's been fun. And I've had a chance to meet a lot of people that I saw on television growing up and got the chance to shake their hands and show my appreciation and, you know, admire their work as an actor, you know, as a fellow actor, you know, now, you know.
Right.
Being a part of the industry, I'm like, you know, I work with these folks, you know, like Robin Williams. I work with Robin Williams, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, God rest his soul, you know.
Yeah.
And he would call us twins. He'd say, "Hey, everybody, this is my twin, you know, look, it's just weeks," and we'd hug each other. just a really, you know, down-to-earth guy, you know.
Yeah.
Fun to be around. Yeah. And I work with Eddie Murphy, you know, did a movie, what was it, Showtime, I think it was Showtime. I did National Security with Martin Lawrence.
Yeah, and, you think over 100 films, right? At least 100 films.
Yes, commercials. I was Magic Johnson stand-in, you know, in a commercial with Jeff Van Gundy and Chris Paul, you know, who I love, basketball players. They're from North Carolina. I played basketball, grew up with James Worthy, and, you know, very, very fond of the Lakers and basketball, and, you know. So, you know, I've met a lot of folks. I did a commercial with Kevin Durant, and I really lived the dream of, you know, coming up, you know, learning the craft of acting. I had an acting school also, and I was able to teach, you know, acting and show the integrity and the commitment that you make as an actor, you know. The glamour and glitz is great, you know, the red carpet, the flashing lights, all that stuff. But that's the end product, you know, because the film is done, you know.
Right.
The film, when you reach that point, the film is done, and it's time to celebrate and, you know, get an award for the work you've done or whatever. But leading up to that, you know, the gritty, grimy in the dirt, you know, working in the sun, you know, with Bernie Mac. I was just there. Bernie Mac and Samuel Jackson and Isaac Hayes. We did Soul Men, and we were out in the sun in Lancaster, California, you know, shooting in the desert. And, you know, but you got to really love what you do. And I tell anybody that get into the business, you know, if you love what you do in anything, you know, it's not work. And always show an integrity toward the craft of acting, you know. Don't take any shortcuts. Learn everything that you can, you know. Respect yourself, respect people, and respect those individual jobs, you know, on the set. Because every single job on the set is a piece of the puzzle that makes that film come together, you know.
Right.
And the average film has over 200 people. So as a producer, you're responsible for all of these people, you know. But Hollywood does it so well, you know, it runs like a well-oiled machine, you know, because everybody is so professional, and they know each individual job from the craft service guy all the way up to the sound mixer and the post-production and the editor, and, you know, everybody is really, you know, good at their craft and been doing it for years.
Right.
And,
right. So,
I have to say,
so taking, So take me, I know you're doing all this great stuff and done amazing, and your career is just huge, but I got to know about the day you went to the Oscars. So tell me what happened. I mean, you just won that day. When did you decide you were going to do it? Was it the last minute thing, or what happened?
Well, first of all, I wrote a book.
Right, of course.
Let's put that out there. I wrote a book. The end product for us forward many years down the road, I wrote a book called How I Went to the Oscars Without a Ticket. So that's out there. But before all of that happened, I went to the Oscars. I was struggling
correct.
As an actor, living in a boarding house, okay, mind you, a small room with a little small dorm-sized refrigerator. All of this stuff is in the book. And, I don't want to tell too much about the book because I want folks to read the book.
Of course not. I just want to know, when did you get the idea that I'm going to the Oscars even though I don't have a ticket? I mean, that's all, you know.
Well, where I was living at, I was living in South Central near USC.
Oh,
and
wow.
I would go every day and pass out my headshots. Back then they had the 8x10 black and white headshots.
Right.
And
right.
I would, get my grind on, catch the bus every morning and pass these headshots out. And on the way to passing the headshots out, I would see these helicopters always hovering in the air, maybe four or five helicopters. And being a military guy, fond of aviation, coming from the Navy, being around planes and stuff, I love aviation. So I came home, asked my neighbor, I said, hey, man, what are those helicopters? And he said, oh, they're over there for the Oscars. And then I said, the Oscars? What do you mean the Oscars? I mean, I said, you're talking about, like, the movies for actors? He says, yeah, they have the big show over there for the Oscars. And so I further researched it and found out that those helicopters was actually part of the media that was hovering and taking pictures over the Shrine Auditorium, which is where the award show was being held. And so as I went to work on, a movie or whatever it was, I was working on High Incident, a television show with Blair Underwood as an extra and at the time. And so as I was on my bus ride there, I start, daydreaming on the bus, thinking about, wow, man, it'd be cool to go to the Oscars, as an actor or just someone to go and watch it, That's the dream for folks,
Right.
And I start thinking about it, and God starts speaking to my heart and saying, well, you know what? Your faith, whatever you believe in is your faith, and my faith, leaning on my faith, he spoke to my heart and he said, prepare yourself and go. And that's what he spoke to me. And when he said, prepare yourself and go, I heard that. And I went to sleep that night. I came back, to that little small room, and I went to sleep, and I woke up the next day after he spoke to me. And it was like I had a new awakening. Like I had like an increased vision, increased more intense vision, increased sound, increased all of this stuff was, increased my senses were like sort of like Spider-Man, my senses were tingling.
Right.
So I went back to work, right? I went to work, caught the bus, went to work, had my headshots, everything in my bag all the time, and I was sitting down at the table and I was talking to some folks, and I told them, I said, yeah, I'm going to the Oscars. And they were looking at me like, you going to the Oscars? I said, yeah, I'm going to the Oscars. And they would look like, yeah, right, whatever.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
So I'm going to ride back home. I started thinking, I said, well, if I'm going to the Oscars, I got to get a camera. I want to, document this. I'm going to take pictures and all of that. So I went to Kmart's at the time. And back then they had these little box cameras.
Yeah.
You could pay like $2. You remember those?
Yeah.
The doorways. And so I got a camera, I said, I'm going to take pictures. I didn't have a tuxedo at the time. I had a black double-breasted suit, and I had black pants, and I had a tuxedo shirt and a tuxedo bow tie.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, I got to put that in the cleaners because, I got to have a suit. And that's what I wore. I put it in the cleaners, got everything prepared. And the day of the Oscars, found out where it was being held at, the guy said, this way. I had never been there before in my life, ever, ever. Never been in that direction ever before in my life. And came home, put that black suit on, walked down the stairs, walked through the neighborhood, and that's where my adventure began. And
there
I met people along the way that was on the sidewalk, and God spoke to me. It's like I can kind of compare it to like having an earpiece in your ear for a journalist or somebody that's, a news person,
And he was like in my ear telling me what to do as I went along that journey, you know. Matter of fact, as I spoke to some folks, they said, oh, you're an actor? And I told them I was an actor, and they said, well, what movies you been in? I was like, I haven't been in the movies. I'm an extra, and I met some folks, and they said, you ever met Leonardo DiCaprio? You know, just people waiting to look at the cars the limousines pull out. And I said, no, I never met him. I'd love to meet him. And so the Lord spoke to me and said, go up the street and go on the other side, because the cars was coming down in front of us, the limos.
Yeah.
We were on the opposite side of the street. And I walked up the street and crossed over and came down the side on the other side of the sidewalk where all the people were crowded on that side. And this is pre-9/11 and all of that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And folks were getting out of the limos and stuff, and I was standing there, you know, admiring everything. And Lord said, speak some Italian to this guy. I was standing in front of me with a ponytail. And, you know, I'm looking at the back of his head. And I started speaking Italian to him because I lived in Italy, stationed over there in the military. And he turned around and started speaking back to me in Italian. And struck up a conversation. He was like a guy that I had known for years. And we talked for a minute, you know, in this foreign language. And then he started speaking English. And then he says, are you going in to the show? He says, are you going in? You want to go in? And I said, yeah, sure. So we walked down the street, and I followed him. And we walked down the red carpet, and we just start walking down the red carpet. And I went on this journey, and as we walked down the red carpet, everybody with the black suits on and stuff, and there was bleachers on both sides. There was bleachers on the left side, and there was the press on the right side. Now I know, you know, how everything is. There was the press, you know, all the big media folks with the cameras. And we were waving at the folks, and people were calling your name and, hey, and over here, and the cameraman and all of that stuff. And went and got, you know, through all of the crowd coming in. So I'm thinking, you know, in my mind, I'm like, I was just being pushed forward. It was like being in a stream, a river, and you can't go backwards. You can only go forward.
Going with the flow.
So, going with the flow. But as I got to the door, I admired these big, beautiful doors, which is the Shrine Auditorium. So I got a chance to stop and look up. And there was like this beautiful gate, you know. And right there at the front, they were warning everybody and all the security stuff. It was like high-tech security. And you could hear all the sounds, you know, the wands going off and stuff.
Yeah.
And they just brought us in, told us, come on in. They had big bouquets of beautiful flowers. And so we walked in, and the first person I saw was Dennis Rodman.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in the book. And, you know, I'm a basketball guy, and I've watched Dennis Rodman play. And I'm like, oh, there's Dennis Rodman. So I rush over to him, leave my friend, my newfound friend. I don't know where he went, but he was like an angel, you know. So, and I said, hey, Dennis, you know, I admire your game. You know, man, you must have been a triple jumper. I was on the track team. The way you jump and get your rebounds, you look like you have the athletic ability of a triple jumper from a track team. And he said, no, I was never on the track team, but, you know, I got the, you know, the gift, the athletic ability. And he said, you want something to drink? We're standing at the bar. And I said, I don't drink, but I'll take a Coke. And I think he bought me a Sprite or Coke. And at the time, Dennis was dating Madonna. Okay.
Yeah.
So here's Dennis Rodman with this, you know, suit on with the big ruffles, you know, looking like Prince. and he bought me a drink, you know, bought me a Coke. And he said, all right, man, I'll see you later. See you inside. And so I'm mingling around, and I'm looking for my newfound friend, and he's on the other side of the, you know, lobby. And so I come to him, and we reunite again, and we're talking, small talk. And so he starts walking in, and I'm following behind him. And we walk into the theater, and he introduced me to some other friends that are sitting there. Everybody's in their seat in these theater-style seats in the beautiful Shrine Auditorium. And he takes a seat, and there's a seat for everybody. You know, there's even a seat for me.
Right.
And I sit down, and, you know, everything starts. Billy Crystal comes out. And the first award was Cuba Gooding Jr. Show Me Money from Jerry Maguire. You know. Jerry Maguire was the picture that Cuba got his Oscar for, and he went wild, you know, Tom Cruise and Cuba Gooding, you know, from Jerry Maguire, and Cuba went wild. That's when he jumped up on the chairs, You know, and he.
I know. I remember.
He got his Oscar.
I remember. That's when I used to watch the award shows because they were good at that time.
It was huge. You know, I love movies. I love the Oscars. I love the glamour and all of that stuff. But back then, it was really glamorous, and you know,
right. It's
a lot of stuff has been taken away from it because of a series of events that has happened in the world. Also,
right.
You know.
Right. Well, like
but,
even the Grammys. I don't even watch the Grammys anymore because it just, I don't know. I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just not the same to me. You know.
I get it, and a lot of their audience has been lost because of, you know, things that happen in politics and stuff, and
right. The
world events that has, you know, kind of saturated it, you know, and people really have to say something about what's going on in the world instead of concentrating on their work and the film. You know, it's like, just talk about the film, stay away from politics, you know.
But
Celine Dion was there. Celine Dion was there, Billy Crystal, who was greatest host in the world. Who else was there? I mean, everybody, Angela Bassett, Will Smith, Robin Williams was there. Celine Dion, she sang, Madonna, she was there, she performed, you know. And all of this stuff was in the book, you know, And it was just
seats?
A wonderful.
How were the seats?
The seats were in the back. They weren't up front. They were in the back, but I could see everything. They were on the floor, first floor. And you know you've got the upper level. You've got the mezzanine and all of that at the Shrine Auditorium. But it was on the ground floor. It was on the ground floor in the back. I saw the whole show, the entire show. And then after the show, you know, going into the lobby, I'm like, okay, well, it's time to go now.
Did you go to any after parties or anything?
Well, I went in. It's like, you know, I was on this journey and God was speaking to me. He said, okay, go here, go this direction. And as I walked through this hallway, through the lobby, my friend says, well, we're going to parties and stuff. And he left and he says, oh, yeah, I see that. He came to me like he had been knowing me for years. And he said, yeah, I saw you with Eddie Murphy and all of this. And I couldn't get a word in edgewise to him. Because before I could answer, he had an answer, and I was just caught up in looking around the room.
Right.
After being in the room, and he was just chatty, you know, and I'm like, oh, my God. So I was taking in, you know, the ambience of the place.
Right.
And I said, yeah, man, I'll see you there, whatever, you know. He's like, well, we're going to go, and, you know, we'll see you over at the what's the big party, the big, not the variety party. There's a big party that they have every year. You know, it's one of the fundraisers.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yeah, man, whatever. So I ended up going into another room on the other side of the building, which is what I know now as the Governor's Ball.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the award show on one side and the Governor's Ball on the other side of the room. And as I went over there, I heard the music playing, and the lady came. She said, come on in. She handed me a program, and I still have it. It's in a plastic wrapper. She handed me all this stuff and directed me in, walked me in, set me down at a table, and they brought me food. The food was delicious. They brought me a chocolate Oscar, which was made.
No.
All the food is made by this chef called Wolfgang Puck.
Yeah.
And
I
Wolfgang
forgot
Puck
the name
is
of the
world
party.
Yeah, the big party that they have afterward. I forget the name of it. It'll come. Yeah,
he's been doing the cooking for years. Yeah.
Yeah. So he does all the food. Wolfgang Puck does.
Right.
And I'm sitting there, and the band's playing, and you know, I'm enjoying the food, you know, and people are dancing. I didn't dance. I just watched everything. And there's a little chocolate Oscar. And after everything was over, I said, well, I'm going to take this with me. You know, I had the napkin. I had a pink napkin. I wrapped the chocolate Oscar in a napkin. And I took it out the door with me. And on the way out the door, I'm meeting folks, and people are taking pictures. And I had my little camera. You know, I'm taking pictures the whole time.
Yeah.
And I met Billy Bob Thornton. He's out there in the foyer, right? So I'm like, hey, Billy Bob, you know, how you doing, man? I said, I love your movie, Sling Blade. That's when he got an Oscar for Sling Blade.
Right, yeah.
You know. And I said, can I take a picture with you? And I took a picture with Billy Bob Thornton with his Oscar, you know, and for the movie Sling Blade. And then I took one with Rick Baker, who got an Oscar. At the time, Rick Baker was doing, he's the master of makeup, you know, prosthetic makeup. And,
oh, wow.
He was working on, he said he was working on two films at the time. He was running between The Nutty Professor and The Grinch. With Jim Carrey. So he did both of those. And, you know, Eddie Murphy was doing, you know, all those different characters in The Nutty Professor.
Yeah.
And Rick Baker did all of that makeup for him. And he's an amazing guy, really nice guy. And I also took a picture with Frances McDormand, you know, who's a wonderful person. And I got people to autograph my book, you know, the new book that I had just acquired from them, giving it to me. And it seemed like I was getting carte blanche service. Everybody else was being told, no pictures, no pictures. You know, security was like telling people to not take pictures, you know.
And
here
I
am taking pictures with my...
Wow.
Huh?
I said, they let you take the pictures.
I was taking pictures with everybody and anybody I wanted to take pictures with. I even took a picture on the stage behind the podium after the award show. At the Shrine Auditorium, you know. A lot of pictures didn't make the book when I further wrote the book later on in my career. But, you know, I have a lot of pictures that I didn't get in the book. But it was just a wonderful, wonderful event. And
It sounds like you had a dream come true evening, that's for sure.
And I rode home in a limousine.
Whose limo was it?
I don't know to this day. I do not know.
What, there was a window outside and said, take me home, James, or what? Yeah.
Well, here's the story. Here's the story to that. After the show, sitting down eating and all of that stuff, taking pictures, walking out. So everybody's, you know, going out, you know, getting to their cars. Limos are still pulling up. And as I'm walking out, this lady, she's, you know, we're having this little conversation. We're walking back out. So I'm like, okay, I'm got to go back home now. And so she's talking, and, you know, I'm like, wow, you know, I'm still caught up in the moment. She says, well, do you have a ride? I said, no, I don't have a ride. And she says, well, I tell you what, I'll give you a ride. I got a few folks in the car, if you don't mind. I said, sure, no problem. So we walk out to the, you know, the way, same way we came back, same way we came in, you know, back through the red carpet. Of course, now there's nobody out there. You know, it's just everybody getting in the limos and being whisked off to the parties.
Right.
So up pulls the limousine. Guy opens the door. I get in. There's like three people inside the limo already. And, you know, we introduce ourselves. Hey, how you doing? And so we're talking, and we arrive. She says, so where do you live? I said, well, I live not too far from here, you know, a couple blocks. And she said, are you going to the parties? I'm like, no. I didn't know anything about parties back then. I didn't know anything about anything.
Right.
You know, so the Vanity Fair party. That's it. The Vanity Fair party. And so I said, you know, I live a couple blocks. And she took me there. They drove the limousine and let me out. I got out of the car, you know, said goodbye to everybody. And they drove off. And I went upstairs to my little dorm-sized room, you know, with the dorm size refrigerator. Took my chocolate Oscar and put it in the refrigerator, in the freezer, in that little freezer part. And I looked up at the ceiling and I just started crying, you know, thanking God. I was like, what just happened? What just happened? You know, and I was like, wow, I just went to the Oscars. This is amazing. You know,
I
cried for a long time, and I thank God for letting me experience that. And it was just amazing. It changed my life.
I was just
going to
say,
is that
what changed your life? I was going to ask you
that. Changed my life about the industry. It opened my eyes to the industry. And then fast forward, as I kept, you know, struggling, you know, trying to establish myself as an actor. And I got a chance to do stand-in work. And I, you know, met Michael Clark Duncan, you know, as an extra on the movie Bullworth.
Mm.
And he was in the movie. And we kind of made a pact to each other, hey, man, if I make it, I'm going to bring you along. And he said the same to me. And, you know, we became like brothers. And I had to move back to North Carolina, you know, to handle some, you know, family stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
And left Hollywood. So along comes a role to play John Coffey. And it's a movie called The Green Mile.
My favorite movie.
So my agent says, listen, I want you to buy the book called The Green Mile. It's written by a guy called Frank Darabont.
Mm.
I don't know if I'm saying his name correctly, but it's written by a guy called Frank Darabont. Read the book, and you got an audition for this guy called John Coffey. So I read the book, went to the audition, and I'm working
with Lisa.
Your
buddy was there. Your buddy was there, and he got it.
No. I'm in North Carolina now. Michael's in Hollywood. He's in Hollywood.
Oh,
I'm in North
okay.
Carolina. Okay. So this is an exclusive. Exclusive. I never told anybody this. So you know, Michael's in Hollywood. I'm in North Carolina, you know, still trying to be an actor, you know, in North Carolina in this secondary market. And so what happened, the cast director says, if you get this role, it's going to change your life, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm oblivious to everything. I'm like, yeah, whatever. This is just another audition for me, you know, because I go in with the seriousness and, you know, intensity. And they sent the VHS tape overnight, FedEx, to Hollywood for the role. You know, back then, that's what they did. Put you on the VHS tape and overnight, the big old clunker.
Yeah.
And so fast forward, Michael Clark Duncan got the role. I'm like, oh, wow, that's cool. My man got it. I saw the movie and everything, and I was like, dude, and then he got nominated for an Oscar. So I'm back in Hollywood now. And I lost contact with him. I'm working as an extra on another movie, background. And I'm talking, you know, and talking to some folks, and I'm like, wow, I wish I could meet up with him. And they overhear me talking about Michael. And so they said, well, why don't you be a stand-in? Somebody said that. And I'm like, well, what is a stand-in? What do they do? You know, you know, and I don't know anything about anything. You know, I'm still learning this whole business. And so they said, well, you should stand in for him. And I said, how'd I go about doing that? They said, well, he's nominated for an Oscar. You should get in touch with the Oscar people and see if you could be a stand-in. So they gave me some more information and, you know, all of that. So I found out where the Academy is located, you know, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, you know, building, to submit my work, to submit my headshot. So I went over there, took my headshot, my black and white headshot, you know, after I talked to the lady on the phone. She took my headshot. She said, oh, yeah, D, okay, we'll take your stuff. If we need you, we'll call you. So I left and forgot about it. And about 2 weeks later, they called me. Hi, D, this is so-and-so, so-and-so. Are you still interested in doing stand-in work? You know, I was like, yeah, sure. Whatever. I'm trying to meet my friend Michael again. So fast forward, I become a stand-in. And stand-in gets to do the work that the A-listers do, the exact same job, except they're not on camera. And I became a part of this small group of people that do this in Hollywood. And they do all the award shows. And they took me in and they showed me how to do the job and took me under the wing. And I was just blessed. It's a small group of people in Hollywood that do all the award shows for the rehearsals. Mm. And I became one of those people, and I've been doing it ever since.
Wow.
And guess who I got to stand in for? Guess who I got to stand in for?
Michael.
Michael Clark Duncan.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm mad at him because he didn't take you with him. He you know, he had that pact and he didn't take you with him. But I guess he did in some degree because you were actually standing.
But he wore over $1 million worth of jewelry to the Oscars. You know, we lost contact with each other. We lost contact with each other, and then we reconnected with each other because he found my card that he had stashed away that I had given him, and that's how we reconnected. And I was a stand-in, and I did movies with him as a stand-in, you know, as a stand-in, The Green Mile, I mean not The Green Mile, Scorpion King.
That's a good one.
You know, and all of those movies, you know, Planet of the Apes and. And did the television show The Finder, where he played a lawyer and stuff. And I was with him up until he passed away, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I was at his funeral and stuff, and that's on YouTube and all of that stuff. But he was like a brother. We really, and I watched his work ethic, and this guy was amazing, you know. And as a stand-in, you get to work really close to the A-list actors. You get to see their process, how they. you know, attack the role and the hard work that they put into it, you know, and you get to do the same thing that they do, you know, as the lighting, you know, and you're the same frame and size,
right,
statue that the person is, and that's what you do as a stand-in. You get to do all the blocking and the marking and stuff. So while he's in his trailer working and rehearsing on his lines,
right,
he gets to come in and he says, okay, Steve, what we got going on? And I say, look, Mike, they're doing a two-camera shot. Here's a camera over here, camera over there. You're going to go over here. You're going to go to your mark here. You're going to face this way. You're going to say this line. Then you're going to come over here and you're going to say that line, you know. So, you know, I'm working really close to the A-lister that I'm standing in for.
Right.
And it becomes, you know, really, really, you know, intimate. And you get to know these people, you know, and you get to make them look good. So you get to do what they do. So it's just been a real, real, you know, great ride. And I've stood in for Michael Clark Duncan. I've stood in for Bernie Mac, you know, Will Smith, Samuel Jackson, Denzel Washington, you know, Richard Gant, you know, Terry Crews, and, you know, get to say the lines and do everything that they do, except it's off camera, you know.
Right.
And get to rehearse.
Right, yeah, you're staging it. Right, you're staging it for them.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, yeah.
I got to ask you, I wanted to ask you about your time on Let's Make a Deal. What was your costume and what did you win?
Hey, my daughter put me up to that.
Hey, I love that show. Are you kidding me? I didn't know what your costume was and what your prize was.
My daughter says, hey, Dad, you want to go on Let's Make a Deal? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And so she says, I got you a ticket to go on Let's Make a Deal as an audience member. And I'm like, okay. So I'm like, yeah, I love Let's Make a Deal. I used to watch that show with my mom growing up with Monty Hall back in the day.
Yeah, me too.
And so I go to Let's Make a Deal, right? And I'm like, who am I going to be, you know? And so I couldn't pick out a costume. I said, well, you know what? I got a tuxedo and a white shirt. I'm going to go. At the time, the movie at the time was The Butler with Forrest Whitaker. And I stood in for Forrest Whitaker also. So I said, well, I'm going to wear a tuxedo and I'm going to play The Butler. That's the easy one. So I put on the tuxedo and I took this tray. And I took some cookies and put on there. And, you know, my daughter, she says, you know, you got to take a lot of stuff because they might ask you at the end of the show, show me a picture of your grandkids. Show me this. Show me that, you know.
Right.
I keep
it
$100, you know.
Right, right.
And so I made a little package, you know, a little Ziploc package with tape and Kool-Aid and all kinds of stuff in there. I just threw some stuff in there, you know.
Right, whatever you're trying to fit in the bag.
Whatever I could find to fit in the bag, and I got on my tuxedo, and sure enough, I'm there, you know, enjoying the show, and here comes Wayne Brady, you know, he's the host of the show.
Yeah.
And he's walking around, all right, who's next on the, you know, who's going to be the next contestant for the big deal, you know, and he comes through, and he stands, and he's looking around, and he stands right in front of me, and I'm sitting, you know, and then he says, all right, how about you, sir? And he picks me, and I get to go up there, and he's like, what do you got here on the tray? And he's laughing. I got cookies, you know, chocolate chip cookies, because in the movie, The Butler, that's what, you know, the butler did. He offered kids these chocolate chip cookies at the White House because he was the butler at the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And he's laughing his butt off. He's like, you got chocolate chip cookies, you got tape. He said, it looked like you're going to have to kidnap somebody. He's laughing. And we're having a good time. And he's like, you know, what are we going to do here? It's like me and you, you know. And so he's like, you know, and he said, whatever's behind the curtain. He said, I'll give you $900. And he just puts this money in my hand, 900 bills, you know. And he's like, you know, I'll give you another $100 for what's behind the curtain if you got a dog. And so I'm sitting there with $1,000.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to give you a clue. It's double D, you know, two Ds, you know. And it's like, I'm like, he says, what is that? And I say, maybe it's Double Duck Chocolate. We could do a dance together. And they put the music on, and me and him start dancing, you know, the robot.
Oh, how funny.
Having a little fun. We're having a little fun. And so I said, you know what? $1,000, I think I could do pretty good with that. You know, me and my grandkids, I think we could splurge a little bit. And,
yeah.
And so I take the money, and the curtain opens up, and there's these two cars welded together on top of each other, you know.
Oh, God.
Yeah, the double Dutch cars, you know.
Yeah.
And it goes wonk, 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 you know, the Zonk
thank
thing
God,
comes
yeah,
up.
You took,
but I get,
yeah, thank God. You took the money.
But I walked away with $1,000. Fast forward, the show was in August, I think it was, August, September. I couldn't say anything to anybody, you know, because you signed an NDA.
Yeah.
And once the show aired, it showed in January. The show came on. I was walking around the park. My brother calls me. He said, "Hey, man," he's in North Carolina, right? He's like, "You're on Let's Make a Deal." And I'm like, "What?"
Yeah.
Yeah, turn the television on, you know, 3-hour time difference. He's like, "You're on Let's Make a Deal." So when it came on TV, I was like, "Yeah, man, I was on Let's Make a Deal." And so then it came on 3 hours later on the West Coast, and I got the check a couple of days later after it aired, you know, and made copies of it, you know, Let's Make a Deal Productions, you know.
Yeah, cool. Well, I had to ask you, I was dying to ask you what your costume was and what you wanted. How cool was that to be on Let's Make a Deal?
I was the butler. I was the butler, you know, from the movie.
The butler did it.
We're dressed up. Huh?
The butler did it.
Yeah, well, I was the butler. And at the time, the movie had come out, you know. And
yeah.
I had stood in for Forrest Whitaker. And so everything came, you know, it was like a... It was another Forrest Gump moment, you know, and
mm-hmm.
it was just a beautiful, and I got a copy of the show. My brother, he videotaped the show for me and sent me a big VHS tape.
Cool. Very nice.
And,
I'm sorry, Dee. I was going to say, we're running short on time, and I just wanted to ask you a couple of things so everybody knows more about you. What do you guys do at DMD Entertainment?
Well, DMD Entertainment, you know, I have a production company now. And, you know, I'm producing my own stuff, you know. I'm kind of a what they call in the industry, quote-unquote, a triple threat. So I'm, you know, experiencing with, you know, my craft as an actor, singer, dancer. And, you know, I produced a music video during the pandemic, you know, like everybody else quarantined and locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And, use my other God-given gift of singing. I want to show my appreciation to my frontline heroes, you know, for bringing me pizza and all of this stuff at the house and taking care of me and risking their lives out there on the front lines. And I said, well, you know what? I want people to feel good. And I came up with this song called Roll On River. And it's to show my appreciation for frontline heroes, for everybody, what they do. My daughter being in the medical field, you know, coming home, having to change her clothes at her house and, you know, and risking her life, taking care of people and all of that. And the Roll On River song was born out of me being quarantined. Matter of fact, tomorrow is the anniversary date. Tomorrow's the anniversary date of the song.
You should have sent me the song. We could have played it tonight.
It's on YouTube. It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's on all the streaming services. And but it's a wonderful song. People have responded to it. It's a happy, feel-good song. It's a country song. They call me the Big Country Cowboy, you know, being a country guy.
Yeah.
I love country music. but I made it to make people feel good, not have any depression, anxiety, no stress, and to just, you know, be happy, to keep fighting as a COVID patient. You know, we're going to get through this thing together. We're all in it together. And to show appreciation for the frontline heroes, to keep going, you know, the grocery store workers. And the music video was released New Year's Eve in Waikiki, Hawaii. And I had a chance to go to Hawaii and, you know, get a little break. And said, well, I'm going to release the music video over there. I was going to do a big release party, but COVID, you know, protocol and, you know, all of that stuff wouldn't let me. So,
right.
But, you know, it's a great music video. If you get a chance, check it out. It's on D. Thompson TV on YouTube. And, you know, I have that, and I have a little fan club following on Facebook, D. Thompson Fan Club on Facebook. And, of course, I'm on Twitter, D. Thompson Actor, the 69th Oscars on Twitter, and, you know, the social media thing. But, you know, God has been
and
good, and he's taken me on this journey.
And
get
the book. How I went to the Oscars without a ticket. Where can everybody get the book? I guess Amazon or anywhere you can get books online.
Yes, you can get it at Amazon, of course, Walmart, Barnes & Noble's. It's in all the bookstores worldwide. We're getting ready to go into Costco.
And also, a little exclusive, I want to let you know that I'm producing the story into a one-man show, you know, in Los
Really?
Angeles.
Very cool.
So I'm sharing that with you, Joanne, on your show,
Congrats.
Exclusive, you know.
Well, thank you.
My publisher, I told her, I said, hey, I'm going to let everybody know that to look out for the one-man show, and I'm going to get everybody in this room, and I'm going to take you back to when I went to the Oscars and take you on a journey, you know, and let you experience what I experienced, hopefully, through me telling my story on stage in front of a live audience, you know. So that's in the work. And you get the chance to dress up, you know, and put on your beautiful gown and your tuxedo and, you know, come on in and, you know, be a part of the red carpet experience, you know.
Nice. Nice. There was something I wanted to ask you, and I just lost my train of thought because I got excited about your show in Vegas. That's pretty cool. What did I wanted to say? Oh, man. Don't hurt me, Bree. I'm just talking to you with the conversation. I don't write questions down. And I can't think. It'll come to me. Watch. After we hang up, it's going to come to me. Oh, man.
Well, I like to say I'm mentoring the young folks. And I like to call Clint Thomas, who's an actor. I told him
mm-hmm.
I might call him in on the interview. If you want me to call him, I can call him and have him say a little something real quick. Can we do that? Do we have time for that?
Yeah, we got a few minutes. Sure, why not?
Okay, let me see if I can get him on.
Go ahead. And hopefully this question will come to me. Oh, man, I can't believe it.
Okay.
Oh, I got the question. Go ahead, call him, and I'll write it down so I don't forget it. Because I don't want to forget this question. Hang on, guys. He's calling his buddy here. I'm writing, by the way, as you can hear. Sorry, guys. Bear with us. He's calling somebody. Hopefully we can get him on the line. He wants to say a few words. Oh, no, we lost him. Oh, no, we lost him. He dropped the call. I guess when he was trying to make the phone call. My question, here he is. He's calling back. Hang on one second. Hang on. Here we go. Let's get D back on the line. Hang on, folks.
We
lost you, D. What happened, honey?
I pushed the wrong button. My bad.
Yeah. It's all good.
But I'm going to try. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You want to try him again?
Yeah, I'm gonna try and get him. Yeah, I'm gonna try and get him on here. I got to figure it out now. 01-01-8. Let's see if we can get.
Hang on, he's getting it. He's just merging the calls, so we're on mute on his phone while we wait. So, let's do a. Do 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 do. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, and welcome to a Plus Radio Show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, no worries. So go ahead. Dean says you want an announcement or you want to give us some inspiration here.
Yeah, Clint, I was telling her about, you know, how we've been on the grind together and how you decided to become an actor and, you know, been inspired and I've been mentoring you and along the way. So tell her something crazy that we've been working on, you know, in the past as fellow actors, producers.
Oh, man. I know we did a lot as far as, like, with his book.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the Oscars and got a ticket, which was a great experience. I learned a lot from him, just from him, you know, with his book, as far as I was just basically being on the grind and promoting it, and we had a lot of fun. And then, crazy thing, there's so many things I could say. I really can't pinpoint one.
Mm.
Passing out flyers on Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, yeah.
Doing the interview.
Passing out flyers on Hollywood Boulevard, yeah.
The book fair over at USC that had over 200,000 people come over the weekend.
That was awesome. USC and also UCLA. Met a lot of great people there. Met a lot of authors.
Nice.
It was really fun.
How long have you been working with Dee?
Huh. what, like maybe approximately what? Could be like 14 years, maybe 15 years.
Yeah, wow. He's a fellow Navy veteran also, you know.
There you go.
And when he told
me
he was going to go to school to become an actor, he went to school and became an actor, and I was like, yeah, right. And he went to school with a broken leg, caught the bus every day, and became an actor. And I was like, you know what, that's strong integrity, that's strong will.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now, what role will you be playing in, with the Vegas thing, with the Vegas show?
That's in pre-production. We're planning that, and that's fresh and new. And we're also looking for funding for that. So once we get that going, give a shout out to my agent in Las Vegas, Bruce Marin Talent Agency there. We're in pre-production in the planning stages for that. But as soon as we get more funding, we're going to grab one of those beautiful theaters in Las Vegas and bring it to pass, you know, bring it to fruition. So we're looking
Excellent.
For, you know, a nice place to have it, a nice place to have it. And Las Vegas is a show town, but it's not a theater town. It's a show town. So
right.
We're going to bring some theater style, you know, acting to the stage in Las Vegas, and it's going to be wonderful. I was telling Clint about the one-man show in Las Vegas for how I went to the Oscars without a ticket, you know, doing the show for that.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Speaking of him being my mentor, I learned a lot from him as far as, like, promotion, the business at hand in Hollywood, how it actually operates, you know, the total conglomerate of it all. It was a great experience.
Clint is in the music video. He's a martial artist. So he's in the music video. And yeah, he's in the music video. And he brought his role as a martial artist to the music video, and we're producing some stuff also that, you know, showcases his martial arts skills. So we're trying to bring a whole another style of Bruce Lee to the screen.
Sounds like the two of you hooked up just in time for each other and making everything work. So that's great.
Yes. But I appreciate you, Clint, you know, coming on and speaking, you know, on my behalf. And, you know, I just want to continue to inspire you to achieve your dream and keep pushing forward, my man.
Beautiful.
Thank you. And vice versa.
Good luck,
you know.
Clint. Good luck, Clint. It was great speaking with you, and you're in good hands.
Oh, definitely. Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Oh, no worries. Good luck to you. Take care. Well, Dee, I've got one quick question for you, Dee, before we go. I got to ask you, would you recommend anybody going out and doing what you did in regard to God touching you?
When I talk to people, I say, listen, whatever you believe in it. Whatever you believe in, whatever inspires you, believe in that. And for my case, it's God Almighty, because that's the way I was raised.
Mm.
That's what I know. But whatever you believe in, let it motivate you, let it inspire you. You know, have a dream, but pursue your dream. Get off the couch, pursue it. You know, I teach self-publishing also. And don't be afraid. You know, you have to pursue your dream realistically. And if you're going to write a book, everybody says, oh, I got a story, I want to write a book too. And I say, listen, if you write, just start writing. If you write a page a day, at the end of the year, after 365 days, you would have a novel. So think about that, you know. And if you're lazy like me sometimes, you can write 10 pages and get ahead of the game and relax the other 10 days. So there's a method to the madness. You know what I mean?
Right.
So just do it. Don't be afraid. You're never too old. A lot of people say, oh, I'm too old to act. No, you're not. Look at Betty White. Bless her soul, you know. She was in the business, you know, I want to be like Betty White. I want to be like Milton Berle. You know, and I want to always have fun. And when it stops being fun, then I'll find something else to do. But do what inspires you, and it's not work. And dance like nobody's looking, and do what really makes you feel good. And when you do that, it'll inspire people, and it'll make people, you know, you'll become a blessing to someone. And I just thank God that He's given me the gift to inspire people, you know, what He's given me as talent or whatever you want to call it, you know.
You're paying it forward. You're doing the Lord's work, and you're paying it forward, and, you know, good comes to good, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And never give up.
Clint, I'm wearing a necklace. I have not taken it off only for surgeries, x-rays, or whatever. And you want to know what it says? I've been wearing it for 30 years. It says, never, never, ever give up. I've been wearing that my for the last 30 years. And the only
and
time
you know
I take
when you
it
give
off.
Up, the next day is right around the corner, you know.
Exactly.
And I always tell folks, I say, listen. I tell folks, listen, reach out to people. Don't be so close to yourself, because if you extend your arms out in the front, you extend your arms out to the back. If you touch the person in front of you or behind you, that's your blessing that you're supposed to receive. Or if you reach out side to side and within that 6-foot perimeter, if you reach out to that person, that's who you're supposed to meet for your blessing to move your career or your dream forward. But if you don't say, hi, good morning, hey, how you doing, then you never know that, hey, that's Steven Spielberg's son, or that's such and such producer's, or that's such and such writer's daughter, or, you know, and that can pass and advance your dream forward with a copy of your book or a screenplay or whatever it is, you know. So, you know, don't be afraid to interact with people on a humane level, you know. We're losing that with social media, you know, we're losing that. So socialize, be friendly, be polite, be respectful, you know, and all those things, but reach out, because your blessing is right there, you know. Don't be afraid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Dee, thank you so very much. It was a pleasure meeting you tonight, and Clint, you as well. Everybody, check out the book, How I Went to the Oscars Without a Ticket, by Dee Thompson. And Dee, what's your website again?
I'm on Facebook. I'm restructuring my website. But Facebook, D. Thompson Fan Club on Facebook, and Twitter, D. Thompson at 69th Oscars, and also Instagram, D. Thompson Actor. And I want to give a shout-out to Tim Heidecker also on cinema. Tim Heidecker and Greg Turrington. I was on this show, three shows on cinema, which is, you know, a spinoff from the Adult Swim channel. So giving a shout-out to them, because I've been on their show, you know, several times talking about the Oscars, and they've been really, really great to me. But, reach out. And if you guys want to order the book, you can order the book. It's $35. I'll send you an autographed copy through my company. And that's Cash App, $35 to $DMD Entertainment, and you can get an autographed copy of the book. And, you know, just be on the lookout. Keep your ear to the ground on my Facebook fan club page and, you know, YouTube. The song is out there. The music video is out there on Spotify, you know, all the music streaming services, and, you know, it's doing extremely well. So thank you for all the support and people that have helped me over the years, all my friends and family and fans. I appreciate everything. Thank you so much, Joanne, for having me.
I give you an Oscar, but I don't have one for that thank you speech you just gave. You know, I don't have one, so, you know. I'm kidding. Dee, thank you so much. Everybody, Dee Thompson, How I Went to the Oscars Without a Ticket. Get your copy and go check out Dee and Clint. He's right behind him, so check it out. Everybody, again, thank you, Dee. Have a wonderful night. It was great talking to you, and a pleasure, and all the best to you. And I hope you let me know when your Vegas show is ready, and we could announce it to everybody when it will be open.
Well, I will. I'll stay in touch, and bring me on anytime. I've got so much to talk about. I can run my mouth. I got that from my mother. And I appreciate
anytime.
You. Thank you so much. God bless you.
You too. Bye, guys. Thank you so much. Everybody, again, Dee Thompson, How I Went to the Oscars Without a Ticket. Get your copy. Take care, guys. Bye-bye. Oh, boy. I want to know more about the book. But we don't want to give too much away because we want you to buy it. Everybody wants everybody to buy their stuff. So, you know, you can't give too much away. But I had another question about the, I didn't know if I should ask it, but I wanted to know when he did that, who broke the story? Because I don't know if you guys remember it. I do. It was 97. And I remember when Extra was popular, or was Entertainment Tonight, all those entertainment news shows were on at the time. And I remember seeing, the story, don't miss, I don't know if I saw the whole story in its entirety, but I remember the promo saying, this man went to the Oscars without a ticket, and I was dying to know about it. So when I saw Dee on Facebook, I was like, I got to know about it. So anyway, he hooked me into probably getting the book, because I got to know more about it. I wanted to know who broke the story, because, what an evening that must have been. And it part of changing his life. Wow. Amazing. Thank you, Dee Thompson, How I Went to the Oscars Without a Ticket. Check out the book and check out more about Dee. And it sounds like Clint is following in his footsteps, so I wish him the best, too. I didn't get Clint's last name. I apologize if I would have said it. Tomorrow night, we've got a great show tomorrow night. We've got, where's the calendar, guys? Hold on. I know who it is, but I want to say the other shows. Tomorrow night, we've got Robin S. And Robin's going to be at the 90s dance party at the NJ PAC on the 19th. And so she'll be joining us tomorrow night on St. Patrick's Day, the 17th, 9 p.m. Eastern. And then Friday, of course, is George Clinton, the master of funk himself, the Funkadelic Parliament. And he's going to be doing his 80th birthday. It's his 80th birthday celebration concert, special guest Nona Hendrix. So if you love music, you're going to love it. That's on the 18th. And again, the 19th is the 90s dance party at NJ PAC with Lizette Melendez, George Lamond, Robin S., CeCe Peniston. The names are right in my face. Brenda K. Starr. I don't have it in front of me. I'm picturing the names that were on the billboard. Anyway, it's going to be a great show. And then who else is coming up? On the 22nd, Alice Cooper and Buck Cherry. That's going to be a great show. We gave tickets away to all three of those events. However, there are other great events going on. There's a comedian there this weekend, and I don't know his name off the top of my head. I'm sorry. I got to get their schedule in front of me when I announce to go check out their site. Yeah, they're having some, with the pandemic over, life's coming back, folks. Get yourself out there and have a great time. So then this tomorrow night, the 17th, with Robin S., and we're going to talk to her. Then on the 19th, we've got a 1 p.m. Eastern show. We've got a couple of folks from the UK. We've got Deborah Bonham. She's John Bonham's sister. And, of course, Jason Bonham's aunt, and her husband Peter Bullock, and they have the band Bonham Bullock, and the new album, I believe it's a new album, I think so, I could be wrong, I have to look at my email, and now we're going to play some music from them, and she's been singing for quite some time, the both of them, they're married actually, and they've been playing out together for quite some time, years, many years, John wasn't the only musician in the family. Then on the 20th, we've got a doubleheader. Yeah, doubleheader, 1 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. Oh, that's the first day of spring. How funny. I thought today spring sprung over here in the East Coast. We've got Astrid is joining us from Animotion at 1 p.m. Eastern on the 20th. That's Sunday. And then Sunday evening, we got Isabel Echeverry. I'm probably saying that wrong. She is the talent agent for, I have it somewhere, I'm sorry guys, I'm not prepared. And then Sheila Conlon will be on the 23rd. She is the, she does all the casting director for a lot of the reality shows. So I'm going to talk to her about that. Then we've got author Howard Bloom has got a new book out, and am I missing anybody? I don't know if I am. He's got a new book out, Einstein, Michael Jackson, and Me, so that's going to be pretty cool. And next month, we're going to have a great month for you guys. So Check out, again, njpack.org. You want to check out any of those shows that I mentioned that we gave tickets away to, go and get yours at njpack.org. And, again, last night, Greg Martin from the Kentucky Headhunters, some great stuff. Wow. Wow. Some great music. And Patty joined me, my sister, Patty Barton, my country queen. And we had a good time and had a wonderful evening with Greg. And hope you guys enjoyed the conversation with Dee tonight. And, again, go check out his book, Dee Thompson, How I Went to the Oscars Without a Ticket. Where do we want to close out? What's today? It's Wednesday? I don't know. Do I feel like a mellow song? Let's see. Eyes of March. Yeah, here we go. All right, guys. Have a good night. Thanks so much for listening. And hang out tomorrow night with Robin S. And hopefully we can play her song, Show Me Love. I hope I get that. So I got to try and get that so we can play it. All right. Have a good night, everybody. Dee Thompson, thanks again. Take care, everybody. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Hop inside my car. Got pictures, got candy, I'm a lustful man. Take it to the nearest star. I'm your vehicle, baby. I'll take you anywhere you wanna go. I'm your vehicle, woman. But now I'm sure you know that I love you.
Love
I need you. I want you, got to have your child. Great God in heaven, you know I love. Take you to Hollywood. But if you wanna see just like you are, you know I think you really should. I'm your vehicle, baby. I'll take you anywhere you wanna go. I'm your vehicle, woman. By now I'm sure you know that I love ya, I need ya, I want you, got to have you, child. Great God in heaven, you know I love.
Heaven, you know.